Welcome to Intersection Live, the tax and accounting profession's premier podcast source, provided by the CPA Technology Advisor and ADP Small Business Services, supporting the accountant community. This is Tech to Go, a monthly fast-paced roundtable discussion with executive editor Darren Root and regular columnists of the CPA Technology Advisor. These thought leaders tackle current technology issues impacting the tax and accounting profession.
Hi, this is Darren Root, and you're listening to episode 29 of Tech to Go. First, I would like to thank our corporate sponsor, ADP, for today's podcast. Today, we're going to talk about sort of software updates from the big three, not the automakers, but Thomson, CCH, and Intuit. We're also going to talk about kind of managing multiple portals in this whole online world of accounting software and how best to manage that and user logins and things. I'm Darren Root, as I said, executive editor of the CPA Technology Advisor magazine. Today I have our regular co-host, Randy Johnston. Randy's a principal with K2 Enterprises. Welcome, Randy.
Good day.
Also, we have Renee Lassert, CEO of Bill.com. Welcome, Renee.
Thanks for having us, Darren.
Dave is occupied today. Dave McClure, our other regular co-host. Dave won't be with us, so the three of us today, gentlemen, let's get going.
Sounds great.
I think I'm going to toss it over to you, Randy. Let's talk about some software updates that are going to be coming out. What can we expect this year from some of the big three?
Well, I think the big picture item here is that the publishers recognize that the economic times aren't the best of times, so they're actually looking at how they're doing their licensing, and they're trying to drive cost of ownership down. We have a lot more web enablement that's appearing, so a lot more support for .NET and those types of issues. So think a little more browser support. Both Thomson and CCH have very clear initiatives in those areas. And I think we've got a little bit of effort from Intuit in that area as well. So, you know, if we take a look maybe first at Thomson, it's pretty clear that each of the major hosted products have pretty strong updates coming for the year. So we're going to see Go File Room with a new version later in the year, and we're going to see Go System Tax with some pretty significant updates. So at the high end in their enterprise suite lines, pretty clear that we'll get more capability in those browser-enabled products. Thomson has actually recently shipped an upgrade, I think in April, for their Net Client. So they did a little bit of dashboard view enhancements. I think you use that in your practice. You can probably speak more to that directly. But they have also added remote payment entry, and we are going to see throughout their products more of this type of integration. Another key item that's occurred in the Thomson line is the improvements to File Cabinet CS, some of which have arrived now, and again, another release on the product as the year unfolds. But some of the key things that are going on there is increased file size, more searchability, the ability to integrate with the client flow workflow application. And we're thinking that workflow in CPA firms is going to be a big thing this year and beyond.
Yeah, I would agree with you. Let me ask you a couple questions about things you just mentioned. Can you kind of elaborate a little bit on what's going on with Go File Room?
Yes. In the Go File Room product, there's probably three or four key enhancements. One of the items is going to be Excel linking inside the product. So in effect, you can do a direct Excel sheet link to documents and vice versa, and realistically hyperlinking existing inside the product. So much more of pointing to documents inside GoFileRoom as a way to get to the documents. Another key feature that's scheduled for improvement is the redaction capabilities, the idea that you can block out certain types of information based on characteristics or selectively. And then the setup itself, more of a control panel type of approach where you've got mechanisms that you can put in place for each user and control the securities and the access and some of those things more readily.
You know, the thing that really interests me about GoFileRoom, and so to kind of catch you up, Renee, on GoFileRoom, I don't know how much you know about that, but it's sort of a hosted document management solution and workflow solution that Thompson has. And in my practice,
Scopanion.
We use... I'm sorry?
Does it compete with Scopanion and solutions like that?
You know, probably not really. I mean, I suspect there's some crossovers there in there, Randy, as it relates to the scan and organize
yes, but
features that it has.
In the CPA firm world, though, for a completely hosted document management system, you know, GoFileRoom pretty much has stood alone since the beginning. You can give a look and feel with some of the other products, but in terms of just complete turnkey, outsourced, you know, pay your access fees and your storage fees and move on down the road. GoFileRoom, out of the 15 or so products that are out there, is the only one that really has that. It does.
The concept, Renee, is that, you know, right now we have our document management system that essentially lives in-house. And when we want to send things to clients, we kind of have to post them up to, like Randy mentioned, that client or push them out to a portal. GoFileRoom, the concept is a little bit more that when we print, it's already out on the portal, and we kind of unlock that for the client to see. So it potentially takes some steps out of it, don't you think, Randy?
I think it does. And the other real key thing on an offsite document management product is the backup, in effect, is automatic. The vendor themselves does backup procedures and offsiting procedures, but in reality, if there's something that happens inside your organization, you've already got a backup of your documents offsite. Plus, the rule of thumb, if you can get to a browser, you can get to all your documents from anywhere, in effect. And so, Renee, not unlike your product where, you know, it's got all the advantages of SaaS, I think GoFileRoom has been around for years and years before these products were really called SaaS.
Right.
And so the implementation can be relatively quick. But if I think about the GoFileRoom product, you've got the document storage part, you've got the 1040 work paper part, and you've got the workflow part. And another real significant strategy shift is the workflow part historically has only worked with the document management product. Well, strategically, what Thompson is doing is breaking the workflow apart so it can be used completely standalone. And then the other part of the things that I just mentioned is this client flow product will actually now be able to be used with the in-house document management system. So in effect, they're leveraging the one software asset, client flow, across multiple systems.
Yeah, you're starting to see more integration with all the in-house systems with GoFileRoom to the, you know, the traditional CS suite.
And
yes.
I think to your question, your point overall, Darren, with respect to what's going to happen with the big three guys out there, document management is something I'm hearing from all of my conversations with folks, that they're trying to make it more streamlined and more apparent for their customer base. So,
well, it's just so important to firms at this point, I think. The other thing that you mentioned, Randy, I thought that was really, it's really pretty neat. I suspect there's not a lot of adoption today because it just came out, but we're looking at it at our firm as this remote payment entry capability where clients can just go into the portal and pay our bills, and our bills are posted out on the portal.
Yeah, exactly. And so when you start thinking about the integration of, you know, firms' bills being able to be paid right through the portal, and as you start looking at these payment services across more of the products, as well as what we're going to talk about in just a moment with their payroll offering, the idea, again, is more online web-enabled transaction capability pretty much everywhere. So, you know, Renee, as you think about that, that's what your whole current venture is, like, all about.
Yeah, no, it's we hear it all the time from firms. We hear it from potential partners. I mean, it is something that has been lacking. So I think, you know, the trends that I'm seeing across the big three in my conversations with them and through the grapevine is document management, web access, workflow, you know, a lot of the things that we've been doing at Bill.com, but more importantly, getting it to be pervasive throughout any of the accounting systems out there will be better for customers. So
yeah,
exciting to see people adopting it.
Yeah, and as the summer unfolds and we talk more about the CCH initiatives here, firms are going to discover they can work with CCH pretty much in an online environment, not unlike Thomson has done for some time with their hosted office, you know, in the creative suite or the CS suite, where basically you can just pay for licensing and have complete access to their data center and run all of the products.
I think it's a great segue. Let's kind of talk about what CCH does have going on this year, Randy.
Well, you know, I think the biggest new thing on the CCH side of the world is the IntelliConnect. You know, many firms have multiple different research products that they use, and of course, you know, the PPC division and the RIA products as well as BNA are all fine research products, and CCH has had a pretty broad suite as well. But what they've done is introduced a product called IntelliConnect. I think most of the practitioners, as you're coming out of tax season, will see a lot of advertising in this because CCH is in a lot of the publications right now on it. But it's well beyond just marketing here. This is a much easier to use research tool. I think there's minimal retraining required, and my encouragement to our listeners is that this using IntelliConnect should be deployed sooner rather than later. I think anybody who is new to your staff that's doing research will find that it takes less training. Some of the key features are you can search all of your subscriptions in one key search. There are filters that apply to really narrow the results, and you can save those if you choose. You can have multiple searches going simultaneously with multiple tabs. They've got a way to break up the screens. They call it a tri-screen view, but it allows working with multiple searches and multiple monitors easily at the same time. All around, I think it's quick, easy to use and learn. And the best picture I can give in a spoken format is think Google search and those type of capabilities across all of the research documents that you subscribe to. It's very fast.
I think that's a good comparison.
Yeah, it really feels like that to me. It's very fast, very easy to use. And if you can type tax code or you can type a few words, this product actually allows you to filter that. And if you've got somebody who's really good, you can set up a few predefined searches, which really helps your team as you're trying to teach them how to do research better.
We started using it about 30 days ago, and I've got to say, it really does feel Google-like, and we're real happy with the platform. Do you see where are they going with that, Randy? Are they going to add more things to that platform? The way I kind of got this is it is a start of a new platform for them that you can add new things to this.
That's exactly right. And in fact, the vision of what's happened with IntelliConnect is pretty important because, you know, CCH is preparing for their next wave of products. And this is actually the first deliverable for a strategy that CCH calls Global Atlas. And basically what they're doing is internationalizing their products, if you will. And so what they're going to do is continue to make these user interfaces for their software a little more universal, be able to apply them on a global basis, and you know, some of the other markets that they'll be able to use exactly the same technologies in include Canada and Asia Pacific and the UK and so forth. So for any of our listeners who happen to have expatriates or do a lot of offshore work, in fact, I'm picturing a firm out of Maryland that does exactly that, you can have access to other codes around the world through the same interface. But additionally, something that CCH had done some time ago was integrating tax research directly inside Word and other Office products. And there's going to be more integration in software, but the other one that's really fascinating is enhancing the research product for more workflow type of approaches. So if you can begin to think about pushing research through workflow, that's an integration that will come as well.
That's fantastic. All good stuff for the accounting profession.
Yeah. And, you know, I guess the other key things on the CCH side of the world is, they are making good progress on their next-gen or .NET product, as I called it in the earlier days. And I do believe that you'll begin to see the release of some of this next-gen product during the coming few months, during the summer, maybe late summer. And probably some of the key things to understand is that you'll be able to get hosted document management, much like you've got hosted global FX tax today, and hosted practice management and portal and so forth. So in effect, with the releases of the products, the CCH group should have a completely SaaSable delivery method for the almost the entire line. I think the way it mechanically will work is there'll be a little smart client that interacts with the web client that basically adds to a browser, but basically with a browser, you've got full access to all of the pieces. So
it's really exciting.
It's very cool stuff. So the best way for our listeners to think about it, if they're a CCH shop, is every CCH product will have a new, much easier to use interface. There's speed ups in the tax product. There's just some really cool stuff going on. Probably the only product that's not directly affected in this release is the CCH Engagement product, but there will be a new version of CCH Engagement here through the summer, version 6, and then we'll see all of the next-gen or .NET pieces applied to that product. So, I think a good way to think about both of the publishers is they've done some pretty significant innovations to their products, while we've been kind of heads down for tax season, and there's quite a bit to look at as you're thinking about how you're going to change your procedures, how you're going to do your workflow, as you're doing your postmortems here and just trying to understand how you'll do things in the future. You're going to want to look at the way that the software is working, because ease of use is probably a real good thing to look at, and we know that's one of the key Intuit strategies.
So that leads us into Intuit. Where are they headed, that you see?
Well, Intuit's been focused primarily around ease of use of Lacerte and integration of that across into QuickBooks. So, if you begin to think about minimizing the amount of transfer activities that a practitioner has to do, receiving data or portalizing the data from clients, quick entry into Lacerte, quick entry, from QuickBooks in effect, that's where most of the effort's been. So for Lacerte users, you may have noticed some of those effects this year. I hope you did. But Intuit's engineering is primarily about how to make things take less time and get done easier inside their products and the connections between their other products like QuickBooks.
What are you hearing from tax season as it relates to, they had their scan product that was integrated this year, wasn't it?
Yes. In fact, all three of the major products in this category, and let's just make it broader. This was the first tax season where I heard very little complaint. I think I'll use that word. Very little complaint about how the 1040 products worked in general. In other words, pretty much all of them seem to be doing their jobs as advertised this year. And so, of course, Lacerte had the new 1040 working relationship with Copanion's GruntWorks product, which no reports of errors there or issues. I think there were very, very few, might be the outcome once, a few months unfold here.
Sure.
But, I think the next major step that the publishers are taking, in some cases like SurePrep has taken, or in the process of taking, like CCH and Copanion have done, is integration of that data entry into the products. So, you know, if we look at Copanion already doing the Go System tax product integration and being in a position to do Lacerte, just like SurePrep is already doing Lacerte and ProSystem FX and so forth, I think you're going to find a lot more of the data entry taking place over the coming tax season.
Well, that's really exciting stuff, I think, for the profession, because if we can find tools and ways of minimizing, you know, the detail work during tax season and cutting some of our hours out, it can do nothing but help, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, you know, I don't know how this is going to come out nationwide, but we are starting to hear of CPA firms that are having, you know, engagement fee request reductions. We know that the amount of work that's being required to do audit compliance is increasing. So, you know, the margin left in those engagements is dropping. So anything we can do right now to drive costs out of the practice, that's really key. And for me, if I had to keep an eye on the ball this year, I'm really looking for ways to get things done easier and at lower costs.
Yeah,
well, I think
absolutely.
I think driving the cost out is, you know, something that I hear in general, not just from accounting firms, but from some of these the firms like Intuit and CCH and Thompson. And what I'm seeing in general is that they're being more willing to partner. I mean, obviously, Lacerte has to deal with Copanion, and that I think a couple of years ago would have been, from my perspective, would have been unusual for Intuit to do a deal with something that critical of nature with the partner.
You know, Renee, if you think about it, you know, with what you've been doing with Bill.com, that's, to me, all about making things easier, faster, driving costs out, and really kind of leading the edge of what I would call, you know, software as a service and the hosted applications and so forth. So we're seeing a pretty big shift here to acceptance of those applications. And I think part of the reason is it's easier, faster, cheaper.
Yeah. Yeah. And right. I think you're seeing it. I'm seeing it for the first time in a long time at, you know, Intuit. I'm more closely connected to Intuit just with people I know and conversations that I've had with Brad Smith. But they're much more open about, you know, partnering. They have this new Intuit partner platform, which I think will have some interesting apps come out over the next year. I don't know if you guys are familiar with that, but that might be another interesting topic for us in the future.
Yeah, it could be, because I've talked to a lot of the publishers who, you know, have asked me directly, should we develop for the IPP, the Intuit partner platform? And I can tell you that every QuickBooks collateral third-party publisher that I've talked to has asked me that question directly, which is fascinating. And, you know, my basic response is, I think this is where Intuit's taken all of their online integration. It's clear you're going to need it for certifications. It's clear if you're going to be enterprise certified, you've got to have it. That's a real big deal strategically from an Intuit perspective.
Right. And it's just, to me, it supports that they get that, you know, the web and SaaS is here to stay. You know, here's a little data point. QuickBooks on the web, QuickBooks Online, has not worked on the Mac until just now, right?
Yep.
So they're putting the resources to make their, even their, you know, their web apps. They launched their web payroll product competing with PayCycle, and they're, you know, being more aggressive about that. So I think what I'm seeing from the big three is that, you know, kind of to Randy's point, they get that the web is a lower cost delivery mechanism. It's a better experience for the customer, and it's a faster way to deploy. And so they're trying to figure out a way to catch up, all of them, I think, and add more services to really help their client base and all that.
Well, the one thing, one of the things we continue to talk about is pushing our practices online. And most of the things we've discussed this morning have been in that vein. So that kind of leads us into our next topic. I mean, there's so many different apps that I am now using online. I mean, I go to my online bank account. You know, I have my bill.com login. I have lots of other logins for lots of other things. Randy, you told me about something called vSphere. Can you kind of talk a little bit about this idea of managing multiple resources online?
Yes, happy to do so. And our regular listeners know from prior podcasts, we've talked a fair little bit about virtualization, and we talked about the three different key providers of PC virtualization, that being VMware, Citrix, and Microsoft. And one of those three providers, VMware, in late April, announced the next generation of their virtualization platform, and they dubbed it vSphere. And the concept that I want our listeners to mull over is pretty straightforward. Their basic claim is you shouldn't have to worry about where the application runs. So to me, this is really a great bridging strategy and bridging technology, because we really do believe that in-house servers that run your applications should be virtualized, even if you only have one server, because it makes them easier to back up, easier to recover, they run more reliably, they're faster, they're cheaper. There's no loss that we can see of virtualizing even a single server. And for very small practices, and I know a lot of our listeners and readers are exceptionally small practices, if you have one server, there is no condition under which I'll put, let's say, Windows Server 2008 natively on the hardware today. I will install the virtualization layer and then put a virtual copy of Windows Server on there, or as Microsoft would like to have you do it, install Windows Server and run their Hyper-V. Well, as it turns out, VMware is now allowing through their vSphere, or will as the year unfolds, your servers to be located in-house or hosted out-of-house or connect to these software-as-a-service applications through a browser. So in effect, as a user, we are less concerned about where the application is running. We can get to all the applications. And the one little twist that was announced with the release of vSphere was a single sign-on approach. Now, I've looked at a number of utilities to help people do this single sign-on, but the concept is when we begin our work for the day, we are authenticated once with our user ID and password, and that security authentication then grants us access to everything that we have rights to. And in this concept of vSphere, they want to be able to have access to perhaps in-house servers or out-of-house servers or SaaS applications without logging into all of these different places. Now Citrix has had a service like this in their product, the Citrix Password Manager, for a while, but it's really only worked for Citrix applications. And yeah, you can kind of make it work for SaaS applications, and it's okay, but it's not a smooth experience. So if we think about this as just a transition strategy where we can run our applications in-house, out-of-house, or SaaS, or some mix thereof, I think this is very nice to have something that's simple to use to get us further down the road.
So the concept is that somewhere in vSphere, in this application, you know, I have registered all my usernames and passwords. And so a single sign-in allows me then just to How do I launch into those various applications?
Yeah, basically the applications, as the prototypical screens show, are simply icons or links. And
okay.
So you basically wind up with a menuing system that gets you to all of these places. Or, you know, if it's in the SaaS world, it's really just links in the browser.
Yeah.
And the passwords are then passed across to those.
Okay, fantastic. Renee, what do you think about that?
You know, it's pretty interesting. I mean, we at Bill.com, you know, being in Palo Alto, we've been very aggressive in using VMware and doing a lot of the things that they talk about in vSphere. Because in addition to the single sign-on, which is really cool, they also, I think vSphere is going to be what they call always-on IT in the box. So for $1,000, you're going to get, you know, three servers in the cloud that they're going to maintain for you and automatically back up. And to me, you know, that combined with single sign-on is just—it's quite powerful, and would be assuming it all works, it's going to be pretty powerful, make a big difference for small businesses that don't have the time. And I think for accounting firms, I mean, there's so much data and there's so many different applications that firms and accountants have to use. And just listening to our call and you hear all the different applications that you and your teams work with, it's, you know, this has got to be a huge nightmare. I don't know what you spend on IT, Darren, but you know, this is going to be something to look at.
Sometimes it feels like too much and sometimes not quite enough.
Yeah, isn't that the truth? And, you know, I don't know what good average numbers are out there, but I read statistics and I read summaries of firm management data, and the indicators are still that $5,000 to $7,000 per person on IT is not an out of the ordinary spend rate. So, you know, if you start thinking about $5,000 to $7,000, and you know, let's pick six because it's going to divide by 12. Well, you know, that's $500 a month of IT expense. And, you know, can we in fact make all the applications run, hosted, and so forth, and still spend some money on training, because that's in that number as well, and drive our costs down with this type of environment? You know, if you're a small firm and you're going to go out and buy a brand new server, to get a big one to run the applications, you're probably still going to have a $6,000 one-time expense plus installation. So, you know, you may have a $7,000 to $10,000 by the time it's installed, hard cost.
You know, it feels like we're kind of in the middle of transition, and I don't think we're completely out the other side yet, but it feels like we're in this transition to getting online, and there's so many great products coming out. People just need to get started down this road, I think.
I think that's true. One thing I probably learned from you, Renee, if I had to give my original source on it, was that, you know, the applications that are being built for SaaS that are running in a browser are very capable. In many cases, they've got a new idea, they're using new tools, and they're doing things very, very simply. And as I reflected on CPA firm technology, because I did the opening keynote for the AICPA Practitioners Conference last week, I actually looked again at the applications that can be run in a browser only. And today, if you said my strategy is to be browser only as a CPA firm, I think you can do it.
Yeah.
Now, you can't quite do it only from Thompson or only from CCH today or only from Intuit. Right now it takes a mix of different providers, but I think that tells me eventually the big boys will play there too, and the attitudes inside the three publishers are certainly indicating they're headed that way. But, you know, if you said, Randy, this afternoon I want to set up everything I have as a browser or a SaaS-enabled app, that could be done. So just imagine now for a minute that you have none of the complications of having in-house server and, frankly, to a lesser degree, and this isn't good from an IT perspective, no in-house IT. But I think that's pretty good from a management perspective, because you've driven out those type of costs, so you can spend your IT money on training and support at the desktop, and you don't have to pay for what I would call the plumbing. And that's a real different model when we start saying no network administrator, very intermittent contracting for any networking installation and services.
Well, gentlemen, we're out of time today, so I hate to cut us off, but I think a great conversation and very exciting stuff for the accounting profession and for our listeners. So thank you very much for your time today, and we'll look forward to joining you next month.
Thank you, Darren.
All right. Thanks.
Talk
to you guys later.
The CPA Technology Advisors Intersection Live podcast series is brought to you by ADP Small Business Services, supporting the accountant community. For more information about the CPA Technology Advisors other podcast programs, webcasts, and our e-newsletter, visit cpatechnologyadvisor.com. To ask questions or leave comments about our podcasts, call 800-456-0864, extension 2106. Or tune in to future episodes where you're able to ask questions live via TalkShoe.com.